yesterday, let me start by asking for thoughts, comments, questions about the material and exercises we did yesterday.
Well, I just want to say this. I went to work after the session.
Oh, poor thing.
And, oh, no, that's not loud enough. That's not And I made a conscious decision that I was going to reflect what my clients brought. And it was surprising. I only had two sessions. And it was surprising how much feedback I got through on my mindset. I appreciate it.
Okay, so just by using more reflection, so focusing on that and being aware of that, you saw that they were much more involved in the session, they talked more. Great, great. I'm glad you had a chance to go home and try it out, even though I'm sorry you had to go to work after. Any other thoughts, comments, questions? Especially about anything that was unclear yesterday. You know, we covered the nature of ambivalence, we talked a little bit about motivation, we're going to talk more about that today. We talked about some of the ORs, those some fundamental techniques. So any question is legitimate. Okay, well apparently everything was crystal clear. That's good. As we go along, just raise questions. Stop me if anything is confusing. So where we left off was this notion of how to deal with ambivalence. And I have suggested that one way to do it was to actually do a decisional balance exercise. And so I thought, this morning we'd start off and I would just demonstrate how you might do this with your client. And I'm going to ask that you pretend that you're a group. Okay? I've done this both with individual clients as well as in group therapy formats. And so what I'm going to do is demonstrate it as if you're my therapy group. So, you know, obviously there wouldn't be this many in the group. That's okay. So let me just start off by orienting you to this. So I might say to the group something like, so today, you know, we've been talking a lot about how people have mixed feelings about whether or not they really want to make a change. And I thought it might be helpful for all of us in the group to do an exercise about that, because it might help you to think through some of your own personal reasons why maybe now is not the best time to make a change, or maybe it is a good time to make a change. So is everybody up for this? Okay. So what I've drawn up here on the board, and, you know, depending on the nature of your setting, I've had settings where I do have a marker board like this, or I just have an easel chart with paper on it. You know, it can be very informal. Or sometimes I have a handout for the person, and everybody in the group would have their own handout, and they can write on their own. But when I'm doing it with a group, I usually try to put something up that everyone can see. So what I've drawn up here is the two choices. Essentially, you have a choice right now to stay the same or to make a change. And because this is a substance abuse treatment group, we've been talking about many of you have expressed maybe you would like to make a change in your cocaine use. So staying the same would mean continuing to use cocaine like you have been. Changing would mean different things for the different people in this room. So some of you might say, well, I'd like to change and just use less. Some of you might say, I don't want to be using at all because it's messed with my life too much. So think about the change that you would like to consider making. So they're staying the same and changing. And then I have two columns for that. So there are the pros, which you can think of as sort of the good things or the benefits. And then there's the cons, which are either the less good things. Or you might think of these in terms of costs. Things that something costs you, okay? So what I'd like to first find out about is, what are the good things or the pros about staying the same? Meaning, continuing to use cocaine sort of the same way you have been. What are some of the good things about that? Anybody?
It relaxes you.
Relaxes you, okay.
Takes the edge off. More social.
More social?
Social.
Okay. So it might make things a little easier socially.
I can keep my same
Okay. What else? What are some of the other good things about it?
It's an escape.
An escape. Okay. Other things? Other things maybe you think you get out of it, things that are benefits for you. Okay, if you can't think of any others right now. So here we're talking about what the possible benefits, pros, or good things about your cocaine use are. What about the other side? Are there some negatives about it? Things that are not so good for you?
Cost.
It's expensive. Okay?
You lose your job.
Lose your job. Okay.
Health risks.
Okay, say more about that.
With the heart, I thought you do a lot of cocaine that you use with the heart.
Okay, so there's a risk to your heart. There are people who've had heart attacks because of cocaine use. And so you might be specifically risking a heart attack or stroke. Okay. What else might be a less good thing about using?
Loss of family.
Okay. So these are family members who might disapprove of what you're doing and sort of reject you because of that. Okay.
Well, it's in your family that you work and take care of that you can no longer do.
Okay, so it might also be children or people who are depending on you and you're not able to take care of them like you would like to. Okay.
Jail or prison.
Okay, so there are some legal threats related to using.
Death.
Murder. What was that last thing?
No, being murdered.
Being murdered. Okay, because some of the people you might have to deal with around this are kind of dangerous. Okay, or if not murdered, you might get beat up or abused or some other negative thing like that. Okay. Are there other things that are not so good about it?
I noticed nobody. What it does to your sense of self.
Sense of self. Perfect. That's exactly what I was about to ask about. So what does it do to your sense of self?
I think of women, you know, mothers and children, and they have to prostitute themselves. It's just a harm.
Okay, so especially if you have to do things
so
that...
If you have to do that, I mean, what does it do to you?
Right, that self-esteem. Hurt your self-esteem, that make you feel like you're selling yourself too cheaply. Okay. So that sense of self can really be harmed. Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like we have a pretty good list of both their good things about using and some less good things. But let's think now about the other side. You know, some people say they'd like to make a change. You know, I've heard some of you in the group talk about it, trying to make a change. But it's helpful when you're considering a change to really think it all the way through and to know whether or not it's really what you want to do. So let's think about what would be the difficult things about making a change. What are the costs or the negative things about changing the way you've been using your cocaine? What would be hard about it for you?
Not being able to provide to get the cocaine money-wise, but not being able to get the cocaine. Okay. Money-wise. Reason why I want to change because I want my family back.
Okay, so the reason you'd like to change is because it's hard to get the money. But if you were to make a change, what are the negative things about that?
So when you're coming down off of a cocaine high and start using it, would you be withdrawing it and paying for the buying?
So the withdrawal would be painful or difficult. Okay. What else? What if you can't? Okay, so what would that mean to you? If you tried to quit and you couldn't?
Just be another thing that I feel like.
Okay, so it might make you feel bad about yourself in a number of ways if you couldn't do it. Okay? How should we put that? What
how should we summarize that?
Fear of failure.
Fear of failure? Okay. What else?
And then you have to think about all of this before you so you get high. You have a chance to think about just these
sometimes the reality might hit you kind of hard. Okay, so you have to deal with the reality, and it might not be totally pleasant.
Yes.
Okay, what else?
Isolation.
Isolation.
You know your friends anymore, you wonder what to do, your house, anything.
Okay, so you might be isolated, you might feel like you don't have friends, you don't know what activities to do, because lately you've been doing a lot of activities around using, so maybe a lot of times people have told me they feel bored when they quit using. Okay, what else? What are some of the other costs, difficult things about changing?
Tell people on business, you know, go to group and be trying to talk to people, I don't know.
Okay, tell people all your business. You might lose privacy, or like if people come and knock at the door that, you know, have been, you know, dealing with you in terms of giving you cocaine or whatever, you might have to say something to them that maybe you don't want to say, like, yeah, I'm not using anymore, I'm not trying to go there, or whatever. There, you have to come up with some way to explain why things are different now, and that means you don't have total privacy. Okay? What else? Okay, so it's hard work. Okay. Well, it looks like we have a pretty good list here of some of the difficult things about making a change. Let's talk now about what about the other side? If you were to make a change in the way you've been using cocaine, are there some things you can imagine would be good about making a change? What would some of the positives be about changing?
Maybe reestablish something about family relationships.
Okay, so you might be able to reconnect with your family. Okay. What else?
Be able to function in society better.
Okay, so generally you can function better when you're not using. And what are some of the specific ways that people might do better when they're not using?
Get a job.
Get a job, you can pass the drug test, you might be able to show up to work in the morning. Okay. What else?
You don't have to hide out from the police.
Okay, you don't have to avoid the police or avoid the legal system. Essentially, you avoid legal problems if you're not doing something illegal. Okay. What else?
Fewer financial problems.
Fewer financial problems. Okay, so you get to keep more of your money to spend on other things. Okay, what else?
You're healthier.
Healthier. Okay.
And you have more of a sense of self-worth.
Self-worth.
Now, because that you turn around, now have a sense of self-worth.
So you feel proud. If you were able to make a change, you feel proud of yourself because you know how hard it has been to make the change. So you'd be proud about that. And also, it sounds like you would no longer have to feel like you're doing something that hurts you, that hurts your sense of self emotionally. Okay? Are there other things that you imagine would be good, possibly, about making a change? All right, looks like we have a good long list. All right, so now that you've looked at this, and all of you as a group have put up some of your own ideas, and because we're in this group, I got to tell you that maybe not all of these apply to each of you, you know, but take from it what's useful to you. But as you look at this list, what strikes you about it? What are your thoughts about this? Where does this leave you?
You're able to see where you are and what your desire in life.
Okay, so you feel
clarity.
Like
there's more clarity maybe than when you're verbalizing.
Yeah, you sort of laid out your thinking about, you know, why maybe it's been hard to make a change. When I look at the list, one thing that hits me is we've got a lot of things in all these boxes. And so as we talked about in this group, when you consider making a change, you know, there's a point at which you have to really make that final decision. Yes, I want to do this. And this kind of exercise that we've just done today.
together as a group can help you figure out whether or not you're ready to make a change, because it is a lot of hard work. And yet I also see people have listed a lot of good reasons why they might want to make the change. So I can see why maybe you've had mixed feelings about it. Maybe on the one hand, you'd like to have the change, and yet on the other hand, it feels good to get high, and there's some good things about that. And so you've been having to sort of weigh those and figure out which one is really stronger. Other thoughts about this from the group? Yeah.
A lot of cocaine, you talk about alcohol, I think this would apply to go well. A lot of cocaine dealers, of people that I've seen, adolescents included, they also sell it. And so a big point to them is financial.
Right.
If you take away someone's livelihood, and that's how they do it, they don't instantly pop up with, oh, I'll be able to obtain job skills.
Right.
So it kind of skews.
Yes, and I do think it's different when you have dealers in a group as opposed to users. You know, if you have dealers, their motivational structure is completely different than users.
Well, what I'm trying to say, though, is over the years, I mean, years ago, we may have just had straight-out dealers. A lot of people who really classify as users also sell it on the side to help supplement their habit. They get it blended together.
And with those, you know, I would be probably wanting to have them take me through, you know, really how much are they getting financially out of that. It may be that it's just enough to support their habit. Most people who are using and dealing are not making a profit. And so I want to work with them in a motivational way to sort of elicit from them how that's really working out. Because they may have some belief, you know, maybe previously they were a dealer and they were not using and they actually did make a profit. But if they're, once they start crossing into using, that typically doesn't sustain itself. So I want to help them think that through in a logical way. But that's a very good point.
And I also want to make another point. I'm combined with the lady over there. I don't know what her name is.
Indeed.
Alicia. Also, when they get picked up and they go to prisons, working with the prisoners, when they go to prison, a lot of time they are absent from that drug, and they switch to another drug, or they try to continue the habit in the prison system of selling things, because that's the only way of life they do know.
Right.
So when they do get out, that's the only living they do not, they know how to do. And some of them start at the age of, you know, coming way back from 11 or 12.
Right.
And this is the only way of living, but the absence for 8 years or 10 years or 12 years, the absence from it, then you have to go back out into society and relearn what is, how to work, what do I need to do. All I know is selling and the word hustle to get what I need to do
right,
to go back. But if you put them back in from the prison set back into their same set, you know, put it back in the same set, the same thing they was doing, maybe the same people were still there, you got to kind of, sometimes you have to grasp it and identify that in the prison system that I do have a problem, so when he comes out, he knows what else he needs to do to make it in society.
Yeah, and I think there are special adaptations you would have to do for somebody who's incarcerated, preferably before they're released, so that they can be as prepared as possible for the temptations they're going to face. Now, you know, the research is really mixed on how well that works, because, in fact, if somebody has been locked up for 8 or 10 years, it's maybe, you know, on the inside they can say, well, I'd like to have my life be really different, and here's what I'd like to have happen. And yet, as you pointed out, once they get back into that environment, and there aren't people standing there handing them well-paying jobs and all of that coming out of prison, the temptations are very strong. And I think that this kind of exercise can be really good for somebody like that, because it helps them lay out what their options really are. Sometimes if you do a decisional balance exercise like this, it doesn't necessarily persuade the person that now is the right time to change. And in fact, sometimes
what you're left with is, gee, I see why you haven't made the change yet, because really, your feelings on both sides of this question are equally strong. You know, if you think about this picture, you know, the pros and cons of change are equally weighted. That's the nature of ambivalence. And really, until you can tip that balance, you know, in favor of change or against what they're doing now, you know, if the costs become higher, perhaps, then you can see why they're stuck and why they haven't made a change. If you think about things even from your own life, where maybe you've considered making a change, but you felt kind of stuck about it and you haven't, you know, gone all the way with it, it's probably the same thing, that, you know, the benefits of change might be good, but the costs are also high. And so, you know, it's hard to really get your motivation up for it when you do that. Now, sometimes when I do this kind of decisional balance exercise, it's clear on the other side. You know, the person might come up with a long list of the reasons they want to change and pretty short list of the reasons why they want to stay the same. And when they look at it, they say, well, gee, you know, it looks like I really should go ahead and take this step because I'm just not getting as much out of it as I used to. So there's lots of different options for what the outcome is going to be of this exercise. My point about showing it to you is that it's really important to address the person, their whole experience, and to show that you're willing to talk about things like it feels good to be high, you know, or, you know, maybe I need to do this to make some money for my family. You know, that you can tolerate that and talk about that and understand their whole experience. I still count that as a therapeutic success, because what's going to happen is even if right now they're not ready to change, they've now built sort of a reservoir of trust with you. And, you know, they may say, you know, I'm not really ready to make this change now, but can I call you in a couple of months? Maybe I'll change my mind. And in fact, when you've done a good job, even if they're not ready to change now, they will come back. And they will come back and ask for you because you've done, you know, the groundwork to make them realize that's somebody who might really be able to help me when I'm ready. So I wouldn't see that as a failure. I would see that as a success. Other comments about this exercise?
I was thinking that on the failure side for quitting, if they are users and sellers, then getting out of that racket or getting out of the gang or whatever they are in, that should be very difficult to find.
It might be.
It would probably have to be a date.
It might be. Yeah, I mean, there might actually be threats to their life if they try to make a change in certain ways, and if that's true, then that's the reality of their experience, and you certainly want to know about that as a counselor or case manager working with them, and you certainly don't want to naively push for, you know, them making a change when in fact it could be extremely dangerous for them. So, you know, again, I think there's almost no way to lose in motivational interviewing, when you stay away from the idea of you arguing for change and instead you let them argue for change, because what's going to happen is they're going to say, I really want this, but here are all the barriers in my way. And then you might be able to use your general counseling skills to help them work through what those barriers are. Maybe some of them you can help them. Any other questions or comments, either about decisional balance or about ambivalence? Alright, at this point what I want to do is I'm going to have you guys do an exercise. Okay, and what I want us to do is let's get into groups of two. So go ahead and pick a partner and move around the room so you can hear each other well. Go ahead and do that now.
Somebody has to move.
She's in the bathroom.
Now, yesterday, you'll remember we talked about the ORs: open questions, affirmations, reflections, and summaries. Okay? Now, those are those fundamental skills of omission or doing, and what I want us to do is practice those with someone who has real ambivalence about something. Okay? So the exercise is this. Now, what you're going to do is one of you is going to be the counselor, and one of you is going to be the client, and then we're going to switch, so you'll each have a turn to play each role. When you're the client, you are going to talk about something you've considered changing. And this really works best if you pull from your own real experience, from your real life. Almost all of us have something we'd like to change, some habit we'd like to do better, or something we'd like to do better. So think about something you're comfortable sharing, but that you really haven't yet made the decision or haven't taken action on yet, that maybe you've been a little stuck about. Okay, so something you consider changing, but you're not 100% there. And as a counselor, your job is to understand your partner's experience and to try to use reflective listening and open questions to really get them to open up about this. And if you want to, try to do a little bit of discussion about the pros and cons. So you might do a little decisional balance just in conversation to try to get at that ambivalence. Okay? So I'm going to let you go each direction for about 5 minutes. And then I'll call time and we'll switch roles. Okay? Let's go ahead and get started.